Well, say anything you please to him, Mr. Girard.
That's where I'm stuck when it comes to say. Anybody asks me questions, I can possibly answer.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I.
The date is June 1st, 1977, and I'm interviewing Mr. Alec Girard, formerly of the Canadian Expeditionary Force, World War I. Mr. Girard,
yes?
Could you state briefly your place of birth and your family background?
In Aberdeenshire. I was born, and my father was a farmer, well, a servant, you know, to the farms over there. And then we came up to this country in 1907. And still farmed. After I came out here to, came out on the emigration, I didn't know too much about it myself, because I was only a boy then. And anyways, we came as far as Brandon, and went out to the farm at Alexander, worked there for, well, all, off and on all the time.
How old were you when you did come to Canada?
12.
In 1907?
I was 11 years old. I came out and I was 12 years old when I was going around the lakes.
And prior to World War I, you farmed in Manitoba?
Yes.
When did you enlist in the Canadian Army?
Well, I don't remember the dates, or it was in the winter time. I think it was just after the Bonspiel in Winnipeg that much of them went down to the Bonspiel and they enlisted and then they came back home. And then after they enlisted, they got a month's holidays, so I went back with the boys that did enlist. And I enlisted there too. But they had already been in a month before I was. But it was all from the same little town of Alexander.
What would this be in the winter of 1915?
No.
1914?
16.
Oh.
I would say it was the spring of, well, 15 and 16. I think it was after the New Year's. So it would be in 1916.
I see. Aside from patriotism and that, were there any special personal reasons that made you
no,
on the list?
I can't say that. It's just that, they were all going to in the army and to Winnipeg. And I thought it'd be nice too to go to the city. I'd never been in, as they say, never lived in the city. So I went along with the bunch, you know, just another. I wasn't even thinking. And my thoughts wasn't that way, at least of thinking about war. And of course, when I told my parents that I was going down to enlist, my dad says, Jeremy will soon get you. Well, I'll say that I'll get some of them too. He didn't want me to go. It was after all, I was of the right age to enlist, and it was my duty to, well, they had drafted me in anyway, so that's the way I looked at it.
That would put you at 19 years?
Oh, 20.
20.
20 or 20, yeah. 21, I guess it was. something like that. Anyways,
what after you enlisted, you got a medical, and what happened after the medical?
Oh, well, they just shot you into a uniform, and then you get out and shovel snow or parade around the streets. And, well, there was all sorts of different things to do. And we'd go to some days, and a bunch of us would go to recruiting. And there was much at recruiting, though. I don't know, but anyways, we took in all the stores, which was quite a thing, you know, in those days, like for me, because I'd never been into a city where you could have nothing to do but go to one store, look around, go to another one, keep on going, and then go back to the barracks. Well, we'd play some games sometimes, we'd play cards.
In the barracks?
In the barracks.
What, you were with the 100 Grenadiers?
Yes.
At this time?
Yeah.
What was your training, what did your training consist of?
Well, we just had to drill and all kinds of different exercises, you know. I'd go on big marches through the town, and sometimes it was quite a lot of snow that winter, and we had to go shovel snow off the road, off the track, off the streets, and that was our daily chores. Sometimes we put on fatigue, which means you go and peel the potatoes, or go and wash the dishes, and things like that, you know. Somebody to be asked to detail. You weren't asked, you just simply detailed to do that job.
Right. Did you receive any specialized training for warfare?
Before?
Before, in Canada, before you went to Europe.
I did some personal training when I was a kid going to school in Scotland. Our teacher was an old soldier from the Boer War, was it?
Boer War?
Boer. Yeah, in Africa there.
Yes, right.
Boer War, I guess it was. Anyway, he was an old soldier and he did his drill, too.
What I meant was, did you receive any instruction in trench warfare? Not at all.
No, I don't think so.
How long a period of time did you spend in Canada before being sent overseas?
Well, we stayed in barracks in Winnipeg until time to put in the crop. We got a month off to come home, and so I went home, helped put in the crop. Then went back to, I didn't go back to Winnipeg, I reported back to Camp Hughes. And then we got our training there, we dug trenches and we marched all the rest of it in the line of army duty.
You were still with the 100
yes.
Grenadiers?
I was still with them until I went over, well, then it was overseas for about, oh, I don't know, a month or so. And we went through two camps, I don't know. And then they split up a bunch, I think about 50 of us went to the CMRs, first CMRs of our battalion. Yeah.
And did you train with the Canadian Mounted Rifles in England?
No. No, it was all the 100th until we went into the trenches.
So you stayed with the 100th over to England.
Yeah.
And you trained at what camp did you train at in England?
I think we went to Whitley Camp first, or I think it was Whitley Camp. Then the whole battalion. Then we went to Seaford Camp, and we had rifle ranges there, and we had the rifle practice and all the rest of that. Then we, part of the time, was taking machine guns to pieces and put them together again, things like that, until we went to France. And then, of course, we went up the line and got connected up with the CMRs. And when you're a fighting man, then when you get in the CMRs, the 100th was just a reserve march, and they just all split up.
How much time did you take? From England, did you immediately go right to the trenches?
No. From England, we went to Le Havre, that's the base, and we had to do some training there, such as mostly marching, and I happened to be one of the lucky guys, I guess, in a sense. I happened to be in a tent where they took measles or something like that. I forget now just what it was. But anyways, so I got held back at Le Havre, and brothers, the whole tent floors, I don't know how many it was now, maybe a dozen or so. And we used to go around the YMCAs and the Salvation Armies and clean their huts out. That's the duty we had until they said we was all right and we could go up the line. So from there, we went up the line and joined the CMRs.
What was involved in going up the line?
Pardon?
When you say up the line, that means going to the front.
Going to the front, yes. Going.
What was that like for you to go up the line?
Well, it was just the same as any ordinary. Say you're going to some place or somewhere, and just you do the shoulders flying, but that was here or there. You just simply took things as they came, and we get up and get the billets, and then we'd go. Then we went into the line. It happens to be that I first went into the line as soon as we went up there, and it was right up in the sap head, right on front lines. It was just they sent somebody out to the sap head in front of the front lines for guard duty. So that's where I was put. Me and my pal, it was just the two of us in that sap head. Of course, there's sap heads all along the front line. In front of, we're on the sap heads. You're only about, some places you're not even 20 yards from the Germans' sap heads.
The sap head is a tunnel coming out into a
hole. Just a little dugout that you stay guard at. At you over the parapet, you have a periscope. Then again, I don't know whether that's what you'd call it. Otherwise, and you look in here, and of course you can see all the score in front of you.
How far in front of the parapet would this happen?
How far in front of the
parapet? Yes.
That's what you...
What would the sap head be connected to the parapet, or would it be...
No, the parapet would be... Yes, it would be connected. The sapheads is connected to the front line. Well, sometimes you get a trench. Sometimes you have to crawl over just to pass. The trenches are... It's only about 2 feet deep, going from the front line out to the parapet, out to this here place where you stood guard all the time. And then we had this here periscope and we could look up. And then we had a wire connected to the front line headquarters. If there was anything stirred out, the Germans coming over the top or something stirred, we'd send back a wire. At least we wouldn't send back no message. We'd just simply pull this wire. So they would be on the alert, and then they'd have their glasses and everything. They'd see what's going on. Sometimes if there was anything going on, why they'd throw a few whiz-bangs in there and kind of scatter things.
Whiz-bangs of shell.
Yeah.
Speaking, what was it like the first time you found yourself under fire? What did you communicate?
To tell you the honest truth, I didn't think nothing about it. I just simply had a job to do, and it's the same as any other job. Say if you want to do something, well, it didn't bother me at all. Like, I didn't even give it a thought. In that way, I don't know why, but anyways, the only time I was scared is the next time when I came back out to the base when I got wounded, then going in again. That's the only time I can say I was really scared. And the shells was, well, they were lighting around me, but that's the only time I could say that I had any thoughts. I guess some of these guys had no thoughts. I don't know.
There were people that earlier you mentioned that you wouldn't like to be in the trenches with if you could help.
Yes. Them. Yeah, anybody over 35 out in the sapphire is no good. They just simply, I don't know this, I was out a couple of times with them. And the next time I was going out in the sapphire, I told the sergeant, I said, send me some guy that's not this here fellow. That's, I went out twice with him. He was a man from Winnipeg. And he's over 35, or around 35 otherwise. But there's no fighting men. They lose their nerve. Not that we have to fight, but just it gets all jerry. They say, this is that, this is the Germans coming over. Well, you can't... you couldn't see, it was dark, and then they'd get you all jittered up. And I used to get scared just by him telling me. And of course, him being an older man than me, more or less, and he was an older man, like in the up the line, longer than I was. I just got there, so I was more or less depending on him. But yet, no, he seemed to lose all control of himself somehow or other. I don't know, he just made you feel scared.
How long a period would you spend on guard duty?
Well, you'd go up there and you'd put 10 days at each, about 10 days, I think it was, if I can remember correctly. You'd go into the front line for 10 days. Then you come out of the front line, go into the reserve for 10 days, then back to the reserve for 10 days, then go. I can't remember how long, but maybe a month or 3 or 4 weeks or maybe something like that, out of the fighting grounds altogether. Yeah.
I see. How long would you spend on sentry duty?
Doing sentry duty. It depends on where you are. It was, let's see, I can't just exactly remember, but it's an hour on or 2 hours on and so many hours off, and then it's a 24-hour job. But I can't remember right now whether it was 1 hour steady on one spot or whether it was 2 hours and then some of the other boys would come and relieve you and you'd go back into your dugout if there was a dugout that you go to, or else you just get into some kind of a
shell.
Well, yes, it's not a shell altogether. We have the trenches here and we dig a funk hole where you could lay down inside of the parapet. Inside. And we'd lay there, but if there was a...
That would be on the reverse slope of the parapet.
Yeah, well, yes, yes. That'd be in the trench side, you see. Yeah.
What was daily routine like in the trenches? For example, when you were on guard duty, what did you do when you weren't on guard duty besides try to sleep?
Well, now, possibly take a walk down the trenches to the YMCA. The YMCA was good. They'd go down there and have a little store and get some, if you had any money, which you didn't very often have, but I fared out pretty good that way. I see fellows have a few francs and get a chocolate bar or two, or else if we had we had candles down there. Sometimes we'd play cards and play poker and things like that, you know. I seem to be very lucky. As I say, we always get to keep ahead of the other boys in the line of...
This would this be on the front trench that you do this? How?
Not so much in the front trench, but back in the reserves you see there's three lines of trenches. There's front line, and then there's the supports to the front line, and then there's reserve, the third line. You're back quite a long ways. Of course, they're still shallow, but still, you're back quite a long ways. They've got to go over two lines of trenches before they get at you in the third, but I never have to have any of that kind of experience, but there was lots of it.
The YMCA, how close would that be to the front?
It supports the second line of trenches.
To be in the second line of trenches?
Yeah, they came up, the headquarters of that part of the line was in the second line of trenches, and of course you got to stand up, you got to take your chances, and you got to walk the parapet right out in the open. Somebody an hour on or 2 hours on, I can't just recall how long, but and you'd get off for a couple, 2 or 3 hours or something like that. Yeah, night and day is just the same.
So you'd never have more than, say, 4 hours off at a time?
No.
So you never got 8 hours of sleep the entire 10 days you were on the...
No. So if you got 4 hours sleep, you're doing. That was, well, you just flopped out or sleep any old time. You could too, any time. And at night, up in the front line, and also in the saphens and supports. I don't think I ever got, but anyways, we always get a drink of rum at night. But sometimes you have to watch yourself. Because if you drank the rum by itself, you'd get so darn sleepy you couldn't keep awake. But I happened to have, I always kept some coffee in my water bottle, the coffee seemed to drown them. It didn't let me sleep enough. I could wake up any hour. If I had to go out at 4 o'clock, of course they always have a corporal come around and wake you up. Never was bothered with sleep.
What were the quarters, if any, in the front trench? Was it?
A place where there was some places where they had bunks made, two bunks, two deep, one in the bottom, one on the top, and they made of chicken wire, the bunks, and you had your own blanket, ground sheet. Some of them carried a lot, carried a pillow, some of them carried different things. As I did, I can remember, I had a pillow too, sometimes. And I always had my girls, you always kept that in a blanket. And then you just spread the crow sheet, blanket on top of that, because you're right on the dirt. Yeah.
How were you rationed? What was the food like?
They'd come around with the big Dixie coffee or tea, and you had your mess can, and you used that, and they'd cut a loaf of bread, one of these long loaves about like that, and divide that into four.
About 7-8 inches long?
Round.
7-8 inches round.
Six inches round. I think that's about it. Anyway, it was just about like that. You cut that in four and you get a quarter.
I see.
Yeah. And I can't, sometimes they'd bring up a big Dixie full of stew. A scoop full of that. I can't just remember. It seems odd to me now. I can't even remember them scooping the stew into my Dixie to eat it. But I know it was done, but I can't place it right now. I can't picture it.
What was a Dixie? Was that your mess tin?
Yes, it's a mess tin. Something like that. It's kind of oval, and it's in two parts.
One part has a handle on it.
I don't know, I think it just folded over. I believe there was a wire inside that fitted inside the top. It had a handle, at least a wire handle, that fitted inside the cover. And you just open it up and then lift out the wire and for hot tea or something like that, you know. That's as near as I can remember.
The night before the Battle of Vimy, what would it be like? You would know that you would be taking an important objective that was fairly well defended.
Yes.
Prior to the actual battle, I'm correct in saying that there was mock-ups or rehearsals of the actual battle on a real life.
It was, yes.
What was it? That was one of the first times that was ever done. That sort of having a rehearsal, that detailed rehearsal. What was that like?
It was just a rehearsal. You'd go out there in the field, and they had it all taped, and then this is your where you are, and you got your objective to take to. I went over. I took my training as I was just an ordinary soldier. But I took sick halfway through it, half through the training for to go over the top at Vimy Ridge, and I took sick. So they give me about a week's leave, which I didn't go out. It was about 2 days I stayed in the... We had just a barn, just a horse barn, and we lay there. And so a couple of days I was all right. And all the rest of the boys was out drilling, or, you know, going to... So I got tired of sticking around our billets. So I went down, and they were taking up a machine gun course. So I just walked in there and took up this here machine gun course along with the rest of them. So when I went over the top, I was with the machine gun course instead of being throwing hand grenades or rifleman, in other words. I was with the machine gun then.
That was a machine gun company in the same battalion?
Yes. Oh, yes. Every platoon had that was a different... This wasn't a company machine gun. This is platoon. It's a Lewis gun. The machine gun for a company, they have the Vickers and other ones, which is they carry two or three parts and you set them up and you go. The Lewis, you carry the thing and shoot.
Right. So you were attached to a platoon?
The Lewis. I can't remember how many of us it was, but there was five or six of us, anyways. I guess, I don't know, six, maybe eight, I don't know. I can't remember, because, I don't know, you just seem to fill in what you're supposed to do. And I was one guy carried the gun, and of course there was another guy followed up behind him, and then we was behind him again with the... discs, you know. Have you ever seen a Lewis gun disc? It's full of shells. And you just put your thumb in there, press it down, put it on the top, and then away she goes. But, that's where I was. And then we got to our objective, and we took the gun apart, cleaned it, in one of the German dugouts, and we went over in one wave. Then we made our objective, and we stayed there, cleaned our gun. Then the other ones came behind us, and they went over the top of us, and it just kept rolling. So many.
Can I-